Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hi friends, how are you? I hope this finds you in good health and secure. Some weird thing on my lenses. Volume 2 of Buddhism Reference keeps growing. I added a couple of terms this morning. Terms that, as I said before, this volume 2 is going to be more about volume 1 or the first book, volume, there is no volume designation on it, but it's the first one. It was a very common, mostly just common vernacular that we use all the time in our modern practice of Buddhism. However, as we study Buddhism, we keep running into these terms that we tend to gloss over and not really think about. And my concern is that these terms become inculcated into our idea of what term Buddhism means. And I don't know, it can be confusing, mainly because these terms, many of them, and you've heard me talk about this so many times, Shakyamuni was teaching a bunch of Hindus, right? It was in ancient India. And India was at his, and Shakyamuni actually complained about it, was culturally just a melting pot of so many different mythologies. Mythologies used as religion and cultural imperatives, and a lot of it simply to reinforce the caste system. You are, this is your destiny, right? You can't be anything other than. Lots of restrictions on really the mind when it comes down to it, but social structure, very rigid. Anyway, using teachings that go back to the end of the last ice age, Vedic teachings, right? Not that they're bad teachings, but that they were used as social controls, governance, yeah? Still are. And a lot of these terms come, that we read in Buddhist texts, come from those ancient cultures. Now, Shakyamuni did confront some of these terms, like karma, as essential to breaking old norms and reinstituting or to institute useful, clear meanings of Buddhist thought for enlightenment and self-enlightenment, self-control. Imagine that. Because he did that, not only was he introducing a new way of thinking, but he was actually taking words from ancient cultural norms and completely changing their meaning. All right. He did that with words like karma because karma was being used to manipulate people and take their power away, their self-determinism away, their agency away, and that was core to the enlightenment of Buddhism, that no one can do that. It's yours to do with what you will. You have agency, so much so that you can actually awaken your innate mind of Buddhahood. Yeah, it's not just self-control, it's self-manifesting, yeah? So karma was an important word to break the back of and reinvent. But he didn't do that with every term. Some of the terms, they were deities, gods, influences, and stuff. And in the skillful means method, they were comfortable, familiar words to the people he was teaching. So let's go ahead and use them. And over time, you'll evolve. Your mind will get stronger. And your capacity will be able to overcome the self-imposed limitations that you didn't even know you were incurring from the use of these this rhetoric, these words. So there's a lot of them, and we continue to read them. And my fear is that we live in a time where everything is instant. And if something grabs your attention, you might go down some rabbit hole that totally takes you away from your practice, number one, and can confuse your understanding. So that's a big driver for this second volume, right? So the term today is asuras, right? How many times have you seen that, right? It's even one of the 10 realms or worlds, asuras, right? So here's my entry. It should be of no particular surprise to the modern Buddhist practitioner that much of Buddhist texts uses words of ancient language from Vedic and Hindu religious systems. Once again, terms such as this and many others were simply an expedient means of communicating ideas of the mind and conditioned behaviors to the audience and people of his time. In some cases, it was most expedient to alter the meaning of culturally normative words like karma in order to drive a paradigm shift in thinking. Many times, however, the simple use of familiar terms was useful to convey ideas that were not great obstacles to leading students to better understanding of Buddhist thought. So here's an entry from Britannica. Asura, Sanskrit, divine. In Hindu mythology, class of beings defined by their opposition to the devas, or shuras, gods, deities. The term asura appears first in the Vedas, a collection of poems and hymns composed 1500 to 1200 BCE, and refers to a human or divine leader. Its plural form gradually predominated and came to designate a class of beings opposed to the Vedic gods. Later, the asuras came to be understood as demons. This pattern was reversed in Iran, where Ahura came to mean the supreme god and the devas became demons. So it's the opposite there. In Hindu mythology, the asuras and devas together sought to obtain Amrita, the elixir of immortality, by churning the milky ocean. Although they had agreed to share the Amrita, strife broke out over its possession, which led to a never-ending conflict. So do you see how that could be useful in Buddhist thought? Do you see that this struggle for craving, clinging, things leads to a never-ending conflict, suffering, dukkha. Yeah, so it's a useful terminology to explain Buddhist thought, but it's not useful if you get stuck on the words as Buddhist thinking. That's not what they're for. So that's it. It's just a little bit of under the cover kind of, oh, okay, so when I read that, I'm really reading about a situation. When I read about asuras, devas, demons, so on and so forth, I'm really talking about samsaric craving and clinging. I'm just giving it a label, right? Again, with personages, lots of that in Buddhism. Okay, hope that helps. If you have questions, let me know. In the meantime, be kind, take care of your health. Please do that, so that you can keep your practice strong, savor it, it's precious. And, let me read a couple of Bukowski quotes. Buscaglia. Very different individuals. No one gets out of this world alive. So the time to live, learn, care, share, celebrate, and love is now. Now, once again, I told you, Buscaglia is no evidence that he was a Buddhist practitioner, but sometimes I think he must have read some about it. One more. Each of us is responsible for creating an environment of warmth and consideration for those we love. I have always tried, he says, to define a good day not in terms of one in which all things were made right and comfortable for me, but rather as a day in which I have been able to make another's day more loving and special for them. Quite a bodhisattva thought, isn't it? We must treat each other with dignity. Not because we merit it, but because we grow best in thoughtfulness. Thanks, Leo. Nice words to keep in mind. All right. And with that, I will let you go, and I will see you in the next one. All right? Bye for now.